You're listening to the Texas Standard.
Schools are top of mind these days, especially as it comes to safety. Staff at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High in Parkland, Florida, returned to their campus today to prepare for the restart of a school year interrupted in the worst way. Though the tragedy wasn't in Texas this time, those of us who used to think these things couldn't happen in our cities or towns have now come to grips that it can happen anywhere. Part of the daily routine here at the Texas Standard is scanning local news websites. We want to make sure we're covering every corner of Texas. But in the last week or so, we've noticed a disturbing trend. I'll read you a few headlines. Dumas Police: student arrested after making school threat. Teen arrested after threatening to shoot up Floydada High. Gun on campus, threat online, lead police to detain two Dallas area students. Producer Michael Marks collected a list of more than a dozen of these, and there are likely many more. So what exactly are we seeing here? Are more people making threats against schools across Texas because they're copying the shooter from Florida? Or are schools and journalists just more attuned to acquiring and reporting this type of information because it's top of mind? To get at a few different parts of this question, we turn to Kristen Anderson, a professor of psychology at the University of Houston Downtown, and Jacqueline Schuldkraut, an assistant professor of public justice at the State University of New York at Oswego. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'd like to hear from each of you on this. When you learn about all these threats that were made in one state in such a short span of time, what's your initial reaction? Jacqueline, can we start with you?
Sure. You know, I think that it's kind of probably both of what you're saying. We do see that there is a legitimate copycat effect, a lot of it having to do with the amount of coverage that these events tend to receive, particularly when they're more lethal, they're more sensational, so they get the round-the-clock coverage that we're seeing. But I think what we're also seeing is a level of hypervigilance among, you know, school administrators, law enforcement, parents, students, because of the fact, especially with the Florida case, it's really highlighting a lot of issues of system failures, issues or moments where the potential shooting could have been disrupted and wasn't.
And Kristen, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with Jacqueline. I think it's probably a little bit of both. You know, social psychologists have a term for this phenomenon, and it's called emotional contagion. I think these things do happen. And as Jacqueline said, when we're talking about a lethality that is so powerful, you can imagine that people are walking around vigilant. And, you know, when guns are part of this, people feel that they have to arm themselves. They don't want to be the only one in a scenario that doesn't have a gun. So I think that plays a role as well.
How about school districts or administrators in the immediate aftermath of something like this, or, you know, what happened in Florida, or even just a threat that didn't manifest? What would your recommendation be to them in how they deal with releasing that information, Jacqueline?
One thing, and this is part something that I very heavily advocate for, is the idea of denying the shooter's fame. There's a no notoriety campaign that was started in 2012 after the Aurora shooting. When there's so much coverage of the perpetrator, when that individual's name is being used over and over again, and when their face is being looped on screens or in pictures on the internet or in newspapers, it signals to somebody who has the same intentions, hey, if you want to do the same thing, you're going to get the same kind of attention. You know, I think especially when we talk about averted rampages, we don't really hear about those unless it's something very high profile. And maybe, you know, a way to address it is to actually show that these things are being disrupted before they happen, to create that culture of it's okay to say something.
So that's an interesting point. And Kristen, maybe you can build off of that, that it's not necessarily a bad thing that we're seeing all of these headlines of averted shootings. In fact, that maybe sends a message to other potential copycats that there are arrests and there are consequences for even threatening to pull off something like that.
You know, I don't know if that's a deterrent for potential perpetrator, but it does perhaps kind of normalize the reporting of problematic behavior or maybe, you know, empower other students to say something. You know, because these mass shooters tend to be almost exclusively male, this is so tied to their masculinity. And so you have these poses with semi-automatic rifles. You have videos that these kids post on YouTube. When a gun is so tied to how you feel about yourself and how you're not going to be bullied and you're going to take people out, that certainly will play into all young men's sense of needing to be masculine, of dealing with whatever fragile masculinity that they have. So I absolutely agree about, you know, reporting this without showing some of those videos and pictures over and over again and tying their names to these videos.
I mean, what media outlets might say sort of in the defense is that they feel like they're doing sort of a public service, like that people want to know a little more about the whys, the motives behind a person who would go into a school and shoot it up. And that is why there's some focus on the shooter. What's your response to maybe either of those arguments? Kristen, let's start with you.
You know, that's true, but I think there's, you know, various ways to talk about these issues. And one thing that the media has not wanted to deal with is the fact that these shooters are young men, pretty much exclusively. They tend to be young white men. So if they want to talk about these shootings accurately, they should start from that position. What is it about some young men that make them feel entitled to deal with rejection in this way? That's a perfectly legitimate and appropriate way to talk about these issues.
Jacqueline, what do you think that media outlets might say people need to know about the shooter?
You know, that's a really great question. And the No Notoriety campaign is not denying that the public has a right to know this basic information. You know, they're suggesting to report on the how and the why. You know, how did the event happen? Why did it happen? So the motivation, the mindset of the perpetrator. You know, you can still get at all of that without repeatedly looping that individual's name. Instead, calling them simply the perpetrator. It's the same two words as their first and last name. You know, so it's denying them that element of fame. They say basically don't name them, don't show them, but report everything else. So we're not suggesting that the public not get the information. We're just suggesting that how they get the information changes a little.
Many adults reference Columbine when talking about the beginning of these mass school shootings, but most of today's high schoolers weren't even born when that happened. I wonder if it's true that it's no longer just a case of copycatting, but that school shootings are now somehow baked into the culture in the United States. Do you think there's anything to that?
Our research shows that mass shootings in schools go all the way back to the 1800s.
Right.
But Columbine was really this watershed moment, a lot to do with the fact that it was the first time we saw as a nation live breaking coverage from the scene of an active scene. And what inevitably happened because of that is I think that nobody, much like the law enforcement response at the time, nobody really knew what to do. And so everybody thought, right, we have to just give all the information about the perpetrators. And so there was so much focus on the perpetrators that for American society, they became household names. And for would-be mass shooters, they became gods. And, you know, I read this interesting piece where it says Columbine can be any type of word you want. It could be a noun. It can be a verb. It can be an adjective. It could be all of these different things. Like, Columbine is a household name. And so that's why we're still hearing almost 20 years later, everything is related back to Columbine. So Aurora was Columbine in a movie theater. You know, Vegas was Columbine at a concert. Pulse was Columbine in a nightclub. It always comes back to that. And if we would stop referencing it and rehashing it, that also might make a difference.
So, I agree with everything that's been said. It's not even so much that this has been kind of baked into the culture, although I think it is with the culture of guns. And again, I have to emphasize this goes back to masculinity and recovering masculinity if you've been bullied or if you've been disrespected. And so these wannabe shooters emulate for that reason. And you may recall that one, that kind of ad that went around for an AR-15 or a gun like that, that said, you know, consider your man card reissued. I mean, like this is so tied to masculinity and fragile masculinity. And the best way to recover your masculinity is to get a gun.
Jacqueline Schuldkraut is an assistant professor of public justice at the State University of New York at Oswego. Kristen Anderson is a professor of psychology at the University of Houston downtown. Again, thank you both.
Thank you
very much.